What's up, peeps?
Hello.
How's everyone doing?
Hi.
Hey,
so
good.
We're
good.
It's not enough energy. I need.
Woo! So good. Yeah.
Yes!
Let's do this.
Jesus.
Yes.
Too much energy.
Agreed.
Ben, is that a whiskey? Neat.
Yes.
All right.
Is
Here's
that a
what
whiskey?
I want.
Neat.
I want from now on for us to start. Maybe not start the podcast, but I want for you to have a segment of the podcast where you just give us a short rating of the whiskey you're currently drinking, because I know they're never the same.
They're often the same. I don't drink good whiskey.
Immediately.
Listen,
this
you
is
want...
not worth a good whiskey.
Listen,
huh?
I'm going to need you to tell Liz
do you
that
want
it's important
a whiskey segment, because
the...
yeah. I will go buck wild on a whiskey segment.
I think it's important that you tell Liz that you need to spend a lot more money on whiskey so that you can have a unique whiskey for every single podcast episode that we do. A unique one.
And then write it off on your taxes because it's for your business.
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Wait, hold on. Do we make money from this?
We will after you do a whiskey section.
That's right.
Oh, that's how we get them.
We're a nonprofit.
195 episodes in. 196, well, Ben starts his whiskey ratings, and we're just, it's where it's at. Yeah, skyrockets.
I did have a dream the other night that Moist Critical shouted out our podcast for some reason, and then we got super popular.
Wow.
Welcome back to the Forecast, a bi-weekly podcast about everything games, film, and news. I'm Aaron Juno.
I'm Alex Cousin.
I'm Ben Diaz.
I'm Caleb Juno.
And I'm Jake Fetterkyle.
On today's episode, number 195, Catan dusts off an old title that's finally coming to life this summer. Take Two is not unfamiliar with layoffs and changes. And Escape the Tarkov dev team is in hot water with players at a really, really bad time. Plus, Dragon's Dogma sales outpace Final Fantasy. Alan Wake, quote, isn't profitable. And of course, we've been playing games. If you'd like to know more about what we do, you can follow us on our social channels. You can check out our website, wearetherizon.com, where we have a ton of original content for you to browse through, including our multi-arc Starfinder adventure, The Discordant Signal. Additionally, everything we talk about is in our cast notes, which is pushed out to whatever podcasting app you are using. Let's get into it. You know what it's time for? It's time for Chad's Community Conversation Primer, hosted by Caleb, a.k.a. CCCPHBC.
You could just leave it at CCCP and call it Caleb's Community Conversation Primer.
No, that was dumb.
Know?
I don't like that. I want it to have to be hosted by, because it's always got to be Chad's Community Conversation Primer.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, since Chad's not hosting this time, we don't have a write-in answer. We just have me choosing one.
Oh.
So here's your prompt. This is kind of a double pronged prompt.
First,
what's your favorite soundtrack from TV or film? Soundtrack, score, etc.
But not
TV
video
or
game, so.
Film?
The can second I, can... one is video games.
I see. We split it out.
The second
okay,
prompt
good.
Is video
I was
going to
say, I don't have...
Because okay. I feel like if I say both, everyone's going to choose a video game.
Take a video game. That's
yeah.
fair.
I
don't know what you're talking about.
Man, all right. Well,
TV.
I'm going to go ahead and say my video game one first, because that's
okay,
pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah,
it's Hollow Knight.
Yeah, Hollow Knight. Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's number one. I don't know anything that can beat it. There's some very close ones, but I don't think anything can beat that.
That's not my favorite, but also I've only played about an hour's worth of Hollow Knight.
Oh my gosh, Ben. My
Spotify day list today had a bunch of video game soundtracks, and it popped up a song from Beacon Pines. I've talked about Beacon Pines before, but man, that soundtrack is so good. I listened to the whole thing today.
Is that
one song?
Is that Dipper Pines' brother? Or
yeah.
You got it.
Okay,
I was
cool.
say, my video game pick is probably Bastion.
Bastion's a good one, man. Bastion's a really good choice. Mm.
Bastion's the only video game soundtrack that I have a full copy of it saved to my phone, and I listen to on a regular basis.
Excellent.
Mm. Wow.
Are we talking original score, or does licensed count?
Mm.
I don't know where you're going with this.
So, like, okay, Hotline Miami has a banger of a soundtrack, but it's all just music that already existed that is in the game.
Does
that count, or is that not count?
I think no.
No.
Because otherwise you could be like, it's Rock Band all the way, man.
That's
Rock
Band. Yeah, that's
the best soundtrack. Checkmate.
Well.
Yeah, I think original,
I guess,
of course.
My answer depends on if Persona 5, if any of that is written for Persona 5 or if it is licensed, because I don't actually know.
I think most of it's for Persona.
I hope so.
I think all of it is.
I will Google Rivers in the Desert, because that's the only song that needs to be. It's such a banger. I was playing the original final boss of Persona 5, and it plays during
song
that. And I was,
oh
so my
good
fucking god, song it's so good. Good.
I almost messaged you like while it was happening, because that I was like, this song is
such
phenomenal.
A jam, dude. Oh yeah. My god. Okay, yes.
For movie
Persona
soundtracks,
okay,
are we excluding like biopics where the entire movie is about a band?
I think that's
that
your jam. That's fine.
Yeah, that's original music by that band. I think that's totally appropriate.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Of course, my favorite. It's obviously Pitch Perfect. Never mind.
Pitch
Perfect. Pitch
Perfect.
It was. It beats out High School Musical barely, but. Sorry, Alex.
Well,
you're bringing up good points.
Game first, though.
Oh, yeah. A bunch of people said Hollow Knight, which maybe it.
Hollow Knight is mine.
Close. Well, is Celeste. We listen to that all the time.
Celeste
also
is phenomenal. I listen to it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, tough to beat those.
Man, Hades has actually got a killer soundtrack, too.
Yep.
I will say, whenever I'm trying to, like, study or do something productive, I oftentimes will throw on the Citizen Sleeper soundtrack.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah,
that's another good pick.
I'm actually changing mine from Hollow Knight to Nier Automata. I think that's actually my favorite soundtrack.
Wow. That is a banger.
Yeah.
I'm also going to say, the upset. As a take that people may disagree with, one of my other favorites is probably Mass Effect 2.
Ooh,
Mass Effect's
really
good.
I don't really
good
know
score,
yeah,
for that.
Like, really good. That's also very good.
All right. Film, TV.
Movies.
We got Ben's. Pitch Perfect. Mine is my favorite movie. It's Your Name. Soundtrack for that's so good.
It is excellent.
So good.
Man, this is just impossible. this is almost an impossible question for
Scott
me.
Scott Pilgrim had a good soundtrack.
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim,
actually,
really good soundtrack.
Excellent soundtrack.
It's a good
but
point.
How can you compare that to something like, I mean, the very
musical
first thing that came to mind for me was Inception, because I love everything that Hans Zimmer makes, but it is so different.
Yeah.
To something like Scott Pilgrim.
Plus, it's got blah. Love that.
Yeah.
Can't get enough of that.
That's so hard, man.
Obviously, that's why we like Mass Effect 2 so much.
I mean,
do you like
Lord of the Rings
better than Interstellar's?
Yes.
Soundtrack? Okay.
Yes, I do. Because it ties so much more into the film.
Yeah.
The Lion King.
You said Lord of the Rings, huh?
It might be Lord of the Rings.
That is a good one.
It's so diverse.
It is very diverse. The other one that I think ties for me is O Brother, Where Art Thou?
Is it good or is it just fun? It's a fun soundtrack.
Oh, no, it's good. It's excellently constructed, and it fits so well into the film. I love it.
Good.
There's
like
so many good
the Rocky
film
Mountains
ones
song from it.
Oh, man. There are a lot of good ones. That's the problem. That is a tough, tough question. You kind of have to go with your gut on it. You can't really mull it over, because then you just get stuck in this rut of like, man, there's like six things I could answer for this. I don't know what's going to be best.
Yeah,
so you gotta not even think about it.
Feeling.
Thinking like Star Wars, Jurassic Park.
Yep.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah. I feel like I don't really know movie soundtracks. I feel like I never really pay attention. I guess I'll say, and this is going to be kind of a weird one, just for, what is it, Duel of the Fates, Star Wars Episode 1.
Really good song.
Heck yeah, dude.
Like, that's
prequel representation.
Like a troll pick. But that song is such a banger. I don't know.
Star Wars Episode 1 had a lot of problems, and its soundtrack was
soundtrack
not one of them.
Wasn't one of them. Yeah.
The music from the prequels is so good.
It's still good. I don't know.
Wow.
Anakin and Padme's love story is kind of terrible, but their love theme freaking slaps. It's like the best love theme in movies.
I keep thinking of video game soundtracks that I love.
Yeah.
I just thought of Halo 3 and remembered how great that soundtrack
was. Man, the Halo that's TV a good show. One too.
The Halo TV show. There you go.
Wow.
There's a lot of good ones. That's a good question.
So I guess yeah, we're doing like TV shows. K-On! Has a good soundtrack. That's an anime, but whatever.
No, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a band, so like that helps tremendously.
Yeah, for sure. Nice. Thanks for that.
I'm surprised you didn't say Fooly Cooly when you got to anime.
Oh, fuck. Fooly Cooly. I'm changing my answer. It's Fooly Cooly. That's not... Is that licensed, though? That's just the pillows. I don't know if that counts or not.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the one I picked is just Radwimps.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, and even Scott Pilgrim's just back right for the most part.
Yeah.
Man, Tron Legacy.
Another really good one.
Actually, yes. Excellent choice.
Honestly, a lot of good ones.
We could probably have the ones. Next, like, you know, two hours just us sitting here naming soundtracks.
They're all so different from each other, though. Like, how do you even compare things?
Yeah. You just gotta pick your favorite, man. Easy to pick your favorite.
Aren't the Final Fantasy games also known for, like, really incredible soundtracks?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still listening to the 16 soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now?
Right now.
Can you pause it?
We can barely hear us.
I listened to it yesterday. But... Man, the 7 soundtrack's also a banger.
Some good ones. Caleb, thank you so much for CCCP HBC. I really appreciate you covering for Chad.
You got it.
Yeah, I want to get into a couple of news-related things before we hop into some game stuff. First and foremost, I was reading an article recently from they were interviewing Hasbro. I think it's the CMO from Hasbro. The article was on Games Industry, gamesindustry.biz, I think is what it's called. Yeah, gamesindustry.biz. They were talking about how they have invested almost $1 billion into their 4 AAA studios in anticipation of building out something similar to Baldur's Gate 3.
Essentially. Yeah, I had read that they were putting a bunch of stuff into internal game development.
Mm-hmm.
That's not gonna go well.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, Larian's been doing this for years and years and years, honing their craft, but you can probably throw something together to rival Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
Like a year. That's no problem.
The guy, what is his name? Ayub? Dan Ayub, who's the head of game studios and publishing at Wizards of the Coast. His quote I like the best. It says, "One of the great things we took from the success of Baldur's Gate 3 is that people really, really like a great, well-executed D&D game. So we've got something like that."
Something
like that.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. We got it. I think
the sad thing is, like, it's not going to be very good, I bet. Like, it at least won't be Baldur's Gate 3 level, but I bet they're going to make a shit ton of money because you call it Baldur's Gate 4, you put it out there.
Yeah.
And people who don't listen to this podcast are going to be like, Baldur's Gate 4, oh my god, I love Baldur's Gate 3. And then again, they're like, why is this so much worse? And it's like, guys, not the same people. You've been tricked.
You hear that, sheeple? Listen to the horizon. We'll save you the money for Baldur's Gate 4 problems.
I bet there's something like that. They're just going to remaster Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2.
Oh, man.
People are going to play it and be like, it's not Baldur's Gate 3, anything like Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
Weird.
At least Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, they're not going to mess up, like, the writing.
That's true. You know? That's true.
Maybe.
At least we got that.
So one of the first questions they were talking to them about...
We completely rewrote the game.
Yeah.
One of the first questions they were asking them, like, why is this so important to Hasbro? And the studio's head was just like, well, video games are an integral part of Hasbro's strategy going into the next 100 years, and we have to make sure that everything comes out is top quality, authentic, and something we can build upon. 100 years, dude.
Wow, dude.
A mistype, right? They meant 10.
No, nope. Right. 100%.
You can just say Baldur's Gate 3 sold 10 billion copies, and we like to make money. Yeah. Like, you're allowed to say that. I don't know.
I didn't realize video games were important until now, and then mm-hmm. now they're really important for the next 100 years.
What a fucking corporate thing to say, too.
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, Baldur's Gate 3 sold really well, so we want to capitalize on that success what everyone's talking about. Nope, this is so important, we're going to do it for 100 years. It's like, okay. Maybe just, like, think about things before you say them. I don't know.
Why think about them? It's
yeah,
more
just
fun.
Saying, whatever.
Anyway, I just thought that was a fun article. $1 billion, though. So maybe something can come out of it. I don't. There's no way it's going to be
Something's
anywhere near.
Come out of it.
Yeah. Well, here's whether the thing. We wanted to or not.
You say that, but we've also had IPs that have been developing for years and years and years only to be canceled because they're stuck or they have like a bad beta or something that just everybody just hates it, just dunks on the game.
That's true.
And they stop developing it.
Yeah.
They haven't set a developer, right?
They have not.
Ooh,
or they're just gonna
who
be
would
internal.
Be a good developer?
I think they're
if we
spending it on
pick,
internal development.
I think it is internal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's so brave.
I would give it to Obsidian.
Obsidian would
choice.
Be a really good pick.
You could give it to Owlcat.
Owlcat? I think Owlcat okay. had a big enough
yeah.
budget,
yeah.
they could hit above their weight class. I think yeah. they'd be... Because, I mean, the Pathfinder games are good. They're just always rough around the edges, and I think it's mm-hmm. because... I mean, partially, it's, you know... I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they're just not as experienced as Larian. Jesus, what
they're definitely
I say?
Not as good right now.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know, you know... Is that because they've only made two games, whereas Larian's literally made, like, 10?
They made the Warhammer one as well. And that,
they did.
Yeah, they
you're
did.
Right, so three.
Yeah.
Is a similar situation from what I've read. It's
yeah.
People seem like it's good, but it's just rough.
Yeah. I mean, I love Wrath of the Righteous was really good. They're the last Pathfinder game Owlcat made.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This does look like they have, it says their current AAA studios include North Carolina-based studio Atomic Arcade, which is developing a G.I. Joe Snake Eyes game. Oh yeah, that'll land. A huge following. Invoke Studios, which is working on another title anchored in the Dungeons & Dragons universe. And Skeleton Key, a Texas-based studio... Oh, no. Skeleton Key and a Texas-based studio, Archetype Entertainment, the latter of which is developing a brand new IP starring Matthew McConaughey called Exodus, which draws inspiration from both Mass Effect and Knights of the Old Republic.
Right. Didn't he come out on a stage and be like, yeah, I'm in a game?
Yeah.
He walked off.
Yeah, that did happen. Yeah, for sure.
Was he in his, like, Lincoln... commercial attire when he did it too?
No,
he wasn't wearing like a smooth suit and talking like all suave.
He didn't seem very into it. He was like, I was paid to be here. I am in a video game.
He doesn't have the foresight that Dan Ayoub does, which is 100 years. I mean, he's thinking like the next 2 to 3 years. He needs to think more long term. Hate to see it. Let's talk about this other thing too, which is Jake, you want to tell me, should I be tipping all of the game developers for all the games that I make, or...
Yes. Yeah, so
for
this...
For games that I buy, I mean?
Yeah, I mean, probably not, honestly. It's kind of a dumb idea. But, so the story is, this was an idea pitched by the former Blizzard president, Mike Ybarra, that's his name, I was trying to remember. But he was talking, I don't even know what the context was. Oh, he just said it on Twitter. But he was talking about how, like, sometimes you get to the end of the game and it just, like, it's you're so blown away you wish you could give the developers more money. And so he was like, yeah, there should be, like, a tipping option to give developers money. And, like, it's a cute idea. He said the ones he threw out were, like, Red Dead Redemption 2 and God of War. He also specifically said a game where you get to the end and you're really blown away and you feel like they haven't been, like, nickel and diming you while you're playing through. And, like, in concept, it's not a terrible idea. I think the issue really is that if you implemented this in the game, like, the developers aren't going to get that tip money. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Like
yeah,
if
in
it's
the
in
game,
the game at
the right
release, it's going to go straight to the publisher, and they're not going to yeah. get anything.
I mean, I feel like lots of indie games have, like, a link on the homepage of their game that says, like, hey, support me on my Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot more
thing?
Sense for indie,
like,
right? Like,
it does. 100%,
indie
yeah,
feels
yeah.
like
big game devs,
the space.
Though.
Yeah, right. Because if you gave it, let's say, I wanted to tip Larian, who does that money go to? You know what I mean? I don't know how big that studio is.
You can't just say, oh, it was to Larian.
Mr. Larian himself.
Yeah, Steve Larian.
I would like my tip to go to Bob in accounting, please.
They have 470 employees.
Okay.
So you have to tip in
increments of 470.
There you go. Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
There's been games I've wanted to do this on before, like mostly free-to-play games like Doki Doki. Mm-hmm. I've wanted to give money to them, and the only way you can do is by buying this fan pack or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's a good way of doing it, I suppose.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of free games or really cheap games like that will have just hey, here are some wallpapers or whatever, but you support, you know, this three-man team. Actually, I think Slay the Princess, that came out last year, I think they have the same thing where you can buy for the soundtrack and some backgrounds. And it's like, you're not really getting much, but it's really pitched as like a support the developer pack.
Yep.
Right.
I feel like that makes a lot more sense for the indie developers too, right? Because they're not expecting to sell a ton of games. They're right. And for people who love their games, it's really refreshing and probably boosting to their morale if they're like, what else can I buy from you? I freaking love everything you've made.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, Doki Doki is exactly, I finished that game, I was like, what can I buy that this man has made? Like, let me give him just a little bit more. That was crazy.
Yep.
And I literally got it for free. Like, this doesn't feel right. I want to give him something.
Yeah.
Hollow Knight, I'd like to give more money to Steam
Hollow
Cherry.
Knight?
I still
cannot
believe.
$20.
So cheap.
Doesn't make any fucking sense.
$15.
$15, yeah.
Whatever, man. Team Cherry, please. Please.
One thing in board games I want to talk about real quick before we move on to video games is I was reading an interesting article about Catan. You know, obviously one of the biggest board game developers, Catan GM. I don't even know what the name of the company is. Catan something is the name of Klaas Tuber's company. Rest in peace. His son has dusted off plans that they had from a long time ago to develop a game that they started developing during COVID and now is supposed to be landing this summer that's going to be called Catan New Energies. And the whole premise of the game is that it's like a normal Catan where you're sort of building out your towns and your cities and your roads and you're collecting resources from things. But in this version, you build power plants to generate energy, and those power plants, let me tell you about them. Those power plants can either be fossil fuel based, or they can be clean energy based. And then based on how you collect things, if you choose like a fossil fuel one, you can collect things much, much faster, but you also generate pollution. If you build clean energy power plants, you collect things slower, but you don't generate pollution. And the game has like an overarching emerging climate system where if too much pollution is produced, then catastrophic failure will happen to the entire place, to all of the players. So like there will be a giant flood that wipes out a bunch of the board, or there'd be some just catastrophic event that's related to just overall climate change in the game.
Interesting.
Yes. Weird. It's a very strange take on I was gonna say beloved game like Catan, I guess for some people, beloved. controversial maybe. But interesting. It's I think maybe coming out at a time where people are more thinking about just in general climate change, so maybe that's why they're like, hey, we can piggyback on this and maybe sell some extra stuff. I don't know.
The way you described it, I'm worried that the way to win is to just build fossil fuel plants and expect no one else to do it so that there's no disasters.
Heck yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that be poetry?
Yeah.
Yep. That probably
life
would
imitates
be.
Art, whatever.
Art imitates life. At the start of the game, you're like, listen, I'm building fossil fuel. Yeah. If you guys don't want to destroy the whole world, don't do it. I'm doing
not.
It, though. We'll go down together if you want to, but I'm doing it.
We'll go down to death together, and I will have more resources.
I know too many
because
people
I started
who call
first.
That bluff, including myself.
Yeah, it's got to be one of those where, like, ultimately everyone just does it. You know, and then you just deal with it later.
Yeah, deal with the consequences.
Because, like, if you let just one person do it, they win the game.
Yeah, I feel like there's got to be some other incentive to using the clean energy.
What if the game's balanced so that the fossil fuels are just better all the time, and it's actually just propaganda against clean energy.
Oh no.
It's like, look at this. Clean energy sucks, man.
I highly doubt that. It's from a German developer. I think it's probably going to be really focused on clean energy. But that would be really funny. Oh man. Anyway, that lands I think this summer, so I will probably pick that up and try it out. Kind of excited. The new Catan game that Janae and I can play.
You play with Janae, the board people. Gets wiped.
She flips the table. You know she's building fossil fuels.
Yeah, she is. Whatever it takes to get there quicker. I gotta win! Anyway. Alright, video game stuff. Let's talk about some video game things. First and foremost, we talk about layoffs and shutdowns and changes to studios all the time on this podcast, recently Take-Two has shut down Roll 7 and Intercept Games. Caleb, tell me about why.
Well, previously, I think last month, they had announced they were going to be laying off 5% of their workforce, which was just under 600 employees, 580, I think they said. And then some documents came out about that they would be closing off two of their studios, shutting down two of their studios, which is Roll 7, the people that make Ollie. Yeah, and Rollerdrome, and then Intercept, which is the studio that's in charge of Kerbal Space Program 2, which is getting shut down.
Yep. No way.
Yeah. Currently in early access, purchasable on Steam.
Getting shut down. That's crazy. Isn't that Didn't Kerbal Space Program has a huge following for people who like really precise, intricate, detailed rule
it's
mechanics for games?
Very popular, yeah.
I was really, really surprised to hear they're shutting down the guys who make Kerbal Space. That seemed like such an easy paycheck, you know?
Yeah. I think technically it's not the same studio anymore. I think a bunch of the people that were on the first game moved to this studio and they started working on the second game, but, you know, to be fair, on Steam, the current reviews, this is probably getting review bombed because of this, but it's 25%.
Oof!
Recent reviews.
Yeah. Brutal. I mean, even all reviews is mixed at 55.
I was reading in the discussion boards when the announcement happened, and it kind of sounded like people weren't happy with it before this, that they had been really slow on updates and weren't doing the things that people wanted them to do with the game and stuff like that, so...
Yeah, most of these reviews are about the studio getting closed. So I kind of expected.
Good old review bombing.
Yeah.
So I did they give any reason really?
No, they've just I think since early 2023 they've been slowly laying off a bunch of people and trying to not close studios necessarily, but
consolidate.
Yeah, consolidate's a good description.
Close studios.
That's what they're actually doing.
That's what it means.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't think we said this, but Roll 7 also made Not a Hero, which I know a lot of us here really enjoyed.
Yep.
I really like Rollerdrome. Rollerdrome's really cool. And it's not something that... it's unique. It's not something that people... I guess Ollie Ollie World's pretty unique, too.
Yeah.
Rollerdrome
did
doing
very well. Right?
Was that the one where you were you rolled around on roller skates and you had a gun?
Yeah.
And you shot while you were in the air? Was it bullet time?
Yeah, you could go into bullet time. You had to do tricks to reload. And you had to take out certain types of enemies with certain types of attacks. You could dodge stuff by doing tricks. Oh. It was pretty fun.
Is this Is this 3D Leica, except on rollerblades, roller skates?
Huh, maybe. It came out before Leica, though.
Wow, Leica.
Wow.
Ripped them off.
Yeah.
There's also a number of other layoffs that happened since last podcast. We're up to 9,400 approximate layoffs this year. I think last podcast I reported 8,800, so.
Jeez.
What?
Yeah.
What a year.
Yeah.
We're going to table, guys. It'll be fine. We're gonna plateau, and that's going to be all the layoffs for the year. I'm calling 10, 000, it right now.
10,500 last year.
I'm going to guess 10,282 layoffs. That's my plan for this year.
We're not going to pass last year, huh? That's what you're thinking.
A very bold underestimation.
Yeah.
Also in sort of studio realm, Embracer Group making, again, more decisions, just, you know, decisions, good decisions, bad decisions. It's hard to tell with them. They make a lot of decisions and moves.
Man, they don't really know what to do with the Saudis really screwed them. They don't know what to do without that $1 billion. Anyway, they are splitting into three companies now. This is their new plan to recover.
We haven't talked about this, huh?
I thought we did talk about this.
Did we?
I don't think so. No?
This was the 22nd when this was announced, I think. So that was after our last podcast.
Okay.
Wow.
Maybe we just talked about it personally.
Maybe. Anyway, we got podcast. Asmodee Group, which is going to handle their tabletop type stuff. Coffee Stain and Friends, which will be in charge of their, quote, A and AA premium and free-to-play games for PC, console, and mobile. And then they also have Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends. I don't know why they like the and Friends thing on their company names.
It's funny.
But to rename those, but they don't have official names for them.
Oh,
yet.
Really? So okay, that makes sense.
Why not just wait until you have a name?
That will be because, of course, they own the rights to Lord of the Rings. Like, all of the rights to Lord of the Rings for some reason. They just bought those.
Yeah, why not?
Well, the Saudis were going to pay them back for it, Alex. It makes sense at the time, probably.
So that'll be their powerhouse AAA game development and publishing for PC and console, and also they have the Tomb Raider franchise in there. Lord of the Rings and Tomb Raider. So, I don't know how that helps them splitting into three companies.
Maybe this allows them to do, like, since they're diversified, maybe they can do more fundraising, like some Series B or Series C fundraising and get some more money.
Maybe. Or maybe they're just like, these are the parts of the company that suck. Those companies are going to die, and then this one will succeed.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not, like, an expert on this kind of thing. But what I have been given to understand is that it seems like they're sort of moving the liability around. So one... particular branch seems to be assuming a lot of the debt of some of the other parts. So it seems like, and I don't know, I'm not a business guy, but my understanding of it, from what I kind of looked at this a little bit, was that it seemed almost like they were setting up, okay, this one is going to tank. This is the one that we're going to put all the debt on, and then it's probably just going to go bankrupt, but then all the other parts maybe will be okay.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's how anything works, but... The little bit I have heard about this, that is the impression that I got.
That sounds correct. I'll take it. I think that's a valid answer.
It at least explains why would you even bother with all these smoke and mirrors?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, what could you gain from this?
Yeah.
I don't know. Money. That's the goal. Gotta raise more money.
It is usually money.
Yeah. You know who else it's money for? Escape from Tarkov. That's who it's money for. They need some moolah right now. And what I find funny is that this, which we'll get into a second of the DLC, this comes in a very, very bad time for Escape from Tarkov because a rival game just launched, The Gray Zone, and they've had over 400,000 copies purchased in the last 2 days. So maybe a bad time to decide to launch a DLC at a, you know, particular price point. Okay.
Yeah, so Escape from Tarkov, for anyone who doesn't know, that's like, it's an extraction shooter. It's been fairly popular recently. But basically what they did, I'm trying to find the exact price point. Here it is. So they just announced a new $250 version of the game that has PvE, as well as some other, like, new gear and stuff that some people have called pay to win. I don't know enough about the game to really comment on that, but I'll assume that they're correct. But the reason, I mean, obviously that's a ridiculous thing to ask for. $250 for a video game is crazy. But the other thing that people are kind of getting upset about is there is an old version of the game that was $150 that was Escape from Tarkov plus all future DLC. And that version does not include this $250 content.
Oh, no.
That's weird.
It's a choice.
Cool. That is a choice.
Yeah. People call them out, and, like, I think he's, like, the CEO came out and said, like, no, you guys aren't getting it. DLC is, like, something we add to the game. This is a new game mode. So it's not DLC. It's different. It's a different thing, guys. You're all dumb, and it makes sense actually that we're doing this.
How?
To be fair, he has had to back down, I think, 2 or 3 times now. So now everyone who bought that $150 version is going to get this new content. Initially he was like, okay, fine. Everyone who has the old version gets a 70% discount on the new stuff. And people were still like, no, that wasn't the deal, my guy. We bought this because you said everything else would be paid for.
Yep. Yep.
And then eventually he was like, okay, fine. Everyone can just have it. Whatever. It's, man, I don't know, man. I guess just greed is crazy.
So the only way you could get the new mode is if you paid $250?
I believe so. That is my understanding
insane.
Of the situation. Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, and it's so funny, because that rival game came out, and they, like, tried to drag it on Twitter. They were like, look at this stupid copycat, and everyone was like, really? You want to say that now? I'm going to go play that, because your game sucks shit now. Like, what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Just, man,
That is wild.
I don't know, man. Like, it feels like sometimes, like, these CEOs, or whoever, I guess, is coming up with this stuff, should just say it to a few people first. And then when they go, hey, no, that's such a bad idea.
Yeah.
You can workshop it, maybe. Because I don't think it's that hard to be like, yeah, this new $250 of the game, we're not going to offer it to anyone who had all the DLC version. And it's going to be $250. Anyone with half a brain is like, okay, that sucks, and that's not going to work. Everyone's going to be mad. We're not going to make any money.
Mm-hmm. They almost certainly have, like, an internal PR review team that does not ever say anything contrary to what the CEO is telling them. He's like, here's what we're going to tell them. They're like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got to have a team of yes men for shit like this and, like, the Unity thing. Yeah. Where it's like, if you said anything to anyone who's familiar with the product, they would be like, you can't do that. That's a horrible idea, and you're going to cost us a ton of money, actually.
Yep. Again, also, it's just really strange on the timing, too, with Greyzone dropping into early access. People like, this is when you want to piss people off?
Yeah, right. Now is the time to just put on a strong face and do your best, you know?
Exactly.
Don't rock the boat. Just let them die out before you do it.
Here's some new, cool, new content. We had, like, here's some small releases to keep you guys here, you know, sort of thing. Don't go play Greyzone. This is better.
I heard that Helldivers 2 put out some free DLC making fun of the Escape from Tarkov guys. I don't know. I don't know enough about the context.
Yeah, I only briefly saw that as well.
It's, like, stuff that has, like, extra large pockets. I think, like, the Tarkov stuff included, like, expanded inventory space or something, maybe.
Amazing.
Incredible.
In other news, in games that make money, but apparently not enough, Alan Wake 2, not profitable? How is this possible, Caleb?
Yeah, it's been 6 months since release, and they still have not... It has not reached back the budget for what it costs. Granted, it costs a lot of money for them to make that game.
I've seen that game. That looks like an expensive game.
Yeah, yeah. I think primarily they haven't sold well for a couple reasons. For PC, it's only on Epic.
There it is.
That's cutting off
weird
a good portion of your
crazy
customer
base.
Like, you shouldn't do that. Strange.
And for consoles, they did not do a physical release at all.
Oh,
I think
weird.
Recently there was a leak that showed that for PS5, there was like a 50-50 split between digital and physical sales. Across just in games in general. So, losing out on maybe 50% of the market, at least for PS5.
Weird.
Which is crazy. I'm surprised there's still that many physical sales happening.
I'm surprised that I figure as well, but...
I will remind everyone that this game came out of freaking nowhere, and no one was sitting around going, you know what I want? Alan Wake 2.
That's true.
No one... Not even people who loved Alan Wake 1.
There's a tiny group of people who are fanatic cult followers of the first game.
Sure, yeah, but you could have done this at a much smaller studio on a much smaller budget and probably made a fairly cool game. Granted, this game freaking rocks. It's excellent.
Awesome.
Across the board, great. Maybe lower expectations a little bit on sales and pull back on a few things. Maybe.
Honestly, Alan Wake 2 to me feels like the game that Sam Lake, the main like creative lead over at Remedy, it feels like the game he wanted to make, and when Control blew up, he was like, ooh,
it's time. Yeah.
I finally get to do it. They can't tell money.
Yeah.
Man. It's like, I'm totally fine with Control being the moneymaker, and then Alan Wake gets to be this weird side project that gets all the weird shit. That sounds great to me.
Just recently got a new edition as well.
Did it really?
Ultimate Edition. I think that's...
I thought that was a while ago.
Oh, maybe that was a while ago. Yeah, that was a while ago. I don't know what I'm thinking about. Never mind.
Good take, Gil. Good take.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Sometimes you're wrong, guys. It's fine.
Man, speak for yourself.
Yeah. I did want to also ask you about this, Ben, because I think this is interesting. The Blizz, no BlizzCon happening this year. Blizzard has decided, maybe not.
No, not happening this year.
Why?
Well, you're leading me on like you have some interesting quote, because the quotes I have are not as interesting.
No, I just really, I figured with the success of, you know, the games that they make, the just overwhelming success of the games they make, they would definitely be doing a BlizzCon.
No, they are not. They are, they have announced that instead they plan to launch multiple global in-person events for Warcraft's 30th anniversary, which is a thing that they're doing this year. And they said, our hope is that these experiences, alongside several live-streamed industry events where we'll keep you up to date, will capture the essence of what makes Blizzard community so special. So, basically, they're going to have a couple Warcraft events, it sounds like, and do some live streams instead. Is that what you were looking for, Aaron?
Well, you know, no, I'm just, you know, just pulling at strings, just seeing what you had. I'm really surprised.
BlizzCon is a huge, like, I hear like things coming out of that every year. I'm kind of surprised that they'd cancel it. It's not like E3 where it was kind of like slowly getting worse and dying. Like it's as far as I know, it's continued to be pretty big.
I'm just surprised with the success of Overwatch 2 and Diablo 4.
Right? They fucking crushed it, right?
But like, okay, that was one. I mean, Diablo 4 probably still made money, and Diablo Immortal definitely made a lot of money.
Diablo 4 also made a ton of money.
It did.
Wasn't Diablo 4 like that Last Epoch ripoff?
Wow.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Nailed it.
It's interesting that they say, rest assured, they were just as excited as ever to bring BlizzCon back in future years.
Why would you? Yeah, like why would you cancel it and think you're gonna bring it back?
They do say, and I don't have the numbers on this. They did say this isn't the first time we're skipping BlizzCon or trying something new.
Sure, there was a global pandemic a few years ago, and then they made some changes.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking that.
Like, but the thing is, there's not a global pandemic right now. So why did you cancel it? You can't just say, "Oh, we're not feeling it." Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Very strange. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Man. While these events are distinct from BlizzCon, we're harnessing all of our creativity and imagination to ensure they carry the same spirit of celebration and togetherness.
Wow.
Those live streams gotta make sure the spirit of togetherness.
Yes. Alex, last but not least in video games, talk to me about whatever the heck this is. Dragon's Dogma 2 path tracing.
You don't know?
Weirdly
enough.
You
call yourself a gamer.
Yeah.
Embarrassing.
First of all, I feel like you usually Google whatever you write in there first, so you don't
have to. I definitely Googled it, but... and I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, I don't even...
So, okay. There, you know ray tracing. It's like cool tech. You know... It's basically like a dumbed down version of path tracing. Like ray tracing is like they take some things and trace some lights to add some more realism to the scene. But a lot of things are still like rasterized, or they have to use tricks for other things because it takes a lot more processing power to literally like trace every single light in every single scene.
Yep.
And so there's a couple games out that have done full path tracing rendering solutions. And it's usually tech demos, like the Quake 2 tech demo, or you've got Cyberpunk that has a path traced setting, or actually Alan Wake 2 has a path tracing setting. But this is just interesting because apparently there is a path trace renderer in Dragon's Dogma 2 that's just not accessible to like normal people unless you go get the mod, because people found it in the game and enabled it with a mod. So it's really interesting because it's not denoised at all, so it's kind of not super usable. But they think essentially developers more and more nowadays are making path trace renderers for their games just to use as reference for what a scene should look like. And then they go rasterize lighting and stuff like that to try to match up to what the realistic version should look like. Weird. And they think that actually might be what this is like a reference tool.
Interesting.
It makes the game look so much better. It's crazy. It looks so cool.
Is it? I'm assuming it's not playable with the mod, or at least maybe not playable at high frame rate or anything.
Or on a normal PC.
Yeah.
So the Digital Foundry video is what I would recommend everybody go watch if you're interested in this. They cover it really well. They had a 4090, and with the settings that make it look like really good, like it would be worth having on over the other version, they were getting like 40 frames a second, which is like not crazy, but it is like the most powerful graphics card on the market.
Yeah,
they're not even hitting 60 frames, so
yeah.
It's just, I think it's really interesting though, just to know that that was just tucked in there.
That's pretty wild.
You should look at some of the comparisons they show in the video, because it the way it transforms some of like the way materials look, like wood and metal and stuff like that, and like interiors and how they
wood. It changes the way wood looks. I'm gonna watch the video right now.
You're speaking his language.
That's my language, man.
It's really impressive.
Okay, I'll check it out. Send me that link so I can post it in our notes, or sure. Put it in here so I can post it in the notes. Okay, you know what it's time for, guys?
I don't.
Whoop-a-bull.
Whoop-a-bull. I probably could have guessed that.
Whoop-a-bull. Alex.
You probably should have.
You're up. What have you been playing, bud?
Yeah, I've been playing mostly Overwatch 2. Oh. I don't know if you've heard of it.
It's, you can say cool I haven't been playing anything. I'm going to skip.
Yeah, that's allowed.
Adventure.
Yeah, I mean, there's a new character, so they're cool. And the mode that's in the game right now, Mirror Watch, is actually a lot of fun. Usually those special modes don't really hit for me, but I've been playing it like exclusively since it came out. So
wow,
it's just like they flipped orientations for a lot of the characters from good to evil or evil to good, and then gave them new special abilities, which is they're a lot of fun. Mercy is a lot of fun. She gets to shoot rockets.
Heck yeah.
Bastion's in there and he's not annoying because he can't transform. And he has a shotgun instead.
Maybe they should just take that character out. Wait. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud.
Is he now an evil Bastion?
It's gotta be. Bastion's a good guy.
Yeah, I guess he's a good guy.
Is he?
He's a good guy. He's best friends with Torbjorn, and he's a good guy.
Sombra's basically a support, even though she's still in the damage category. You hack your allies, and you give them overhealth, and you make them shoot faster. And then your ultimate just gives everybody overhealth, like Lucio ult.
That's really cool idea.
Yeah.
I had heard, there were rumors going around, maybe these were coming from inside Blizzard, but that when they were reworking Sombra, one of the things they were thinking about was that she could hack allies. Because they were trying to find a way to make a hacking toolkit not toxic.
Yeah.
What does Lucio's ult do in response?
Lucio's not in the mode.
Oh, okay.
It's not. Yeah, it's not every character.
Not all the characters.
Oh, Lucio's a true neutral, so he doesn't get to be.
So basically, they're like, we're not redoing Lucio, so let's make another character be Lucio.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
makes sense to me.
I'll go next. I've been playing two things. First one, of course, I've been playing a little bit more of the Miasma Chronicles. I think it's Miasma. They say it differently. The characters say it differently in game.
I'm sure they
weird to me. I really like this game, but of course, you guys know how much I like the first game from the Bearded Ladies, Mutineer Zero. I freaking love that game. Played the crap out of it. This game, I think, makes some really good changes. It still lacks some polish in areas where it feels a little bit clunky at times, and it does feel a little bit, it can, depending on how you approach combat, feel a little bit repetitive. You kind of do the same thing in kind of a loop in some areas, kind of depending on what combatants you fight against. But I really like the customizations you can do for the characters. You kind of have four different tree directions you can take your companions in. And the glove, which is like the main component of this game, the main guy, Elvis, he wears a glove, and this glove is able to control the miasma. And as he absorbs it, he gains more and more powerful abilities. But those abilities take energy. They call it kilowatts in game. And you have to literally find batteries between combat to be able to use it again. So I think the way the game intends you to use it is to find a difficult combat, use the abilities to make that combat a little bit easier for you, and then fight your way through smaller bouts here and there in order to hopefully pick up a battery by, like, you know, scrounging stuff somewhere.
Is that a satisfying loop or a frustrating loop?
It's satisfying because the game also has a stealth element. So I now have silencers on two of my characters, and I can run around, and as long as I watch the sort of movement paths of the enemies, I can shoot almost entire groupings of enemies and kill them all before I'm noticed.
Wow.
Yes. And there's this like mechanic in game where a character, I don't know the name of it, but they like essentially become enraged after they kill a certain number of people. Then they have a guaranteed crit where the crit percentage over 100% is equal to the extra damage that they do. So for characters like that do like a base 65% crit chance, like snipers on from high ground, when they get a plus 100 and they're doing 165% crit chance, that bonus is just extra damage. So then you can walk around and kill small enemies until you get enraged, and then get up on a high hill and shoot a person you would not be able to, you know, kill silently otherwise, to sort of migrate your way or navigate your way through an area. But it's fun. The storytelling's cool. The story that is being built in game is very unique. Obviously, it is not. When you compare anything to Baldur's Gate, it's like the storytelling is absolute trash in comparison. But it's fun to play, and it's I think playing with the controller, I said this last time, but I think playing with a controller is a much better experience than mouse and keyboard for this game specifically. Mm. So if you want a casual turn-based tactics game, This is it. You lean back, grab your controller, play. Fun. I enjoy it. The other thing I've played is not a video game. It is a board game. It is a card game. It's a card game called Cheers to the Governor. I wanted to bring this up because I think it's a really unique concept. Essentially, there are 21 numbered cards from 1 to 21, and then there's a giant stack of probably 100 cards of new rules. And the point of the game is that number of people sitting in a circle will say the numbers 1 through 21 in order. I would say 1, the person to my left would say 2, and so on and so forth till you get to 21. And when you get to 21, you say cheers to the governor, and then it rotates to the next person who becomes the governor and institutes a new rule. And that new rule can be anything from saying, what number are we on? To bark like a dog, to pelvic thrust, to, I mean, whatever you can imagine. And the goal of the game, or the sort of mechanics of the game, are when you pick a new rule, you also pick a corresponding number. So for instance, the new rule is bark like a dog, and the corresponding number is 7. Well, that is permanently replaced as number 7. We would go 5, 6, woof, woof, 8, 9, so on and so forth through 21. The goal of the game is to get all 21 rules replaced, and to be able to do them without, and you do not show these to anybody. You tell everybody what the rule is, but then you set it face down. And everyone at the table has to remember what all of the rules are for each iteration of going around in a group. It is obnoxious and fun and really interesting. It's like a refreshingly interesting party game. which I feel like they're all the same. So this is a nice like change of pace.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of a Mao feel to it almost.
I was about to say Mao.
Exactly that. And Janae,
except less obnoxious. Maybe.
When I first told her about it, she's like, is it like that freaking Mao game? I'm like, Mao? Yeah, I hate that game. I'm like, it's not like that. It's not like that. Of course, I didn't know at the time that it was almost exactly like that.
Got her.
No, of course not. Yeah, it's completely different.
It's fun, though. It's fun, though. If you guys want a fun, cheap, I think it was like $15 on Amazon, easy to haul around party game, and it does not take, honestly, it would be a very good drinking game, too, because you could play a version where you don't fail when you mess up the rule, but you have to drink when you mess up a rule.
Sure.
Yeah, boy, I could get out of control real fast.
So, okay. Maybe, sorry if I missed this, but what do you buy? This sounds like a game I could play just now with nothing.
Out loud.
You can.
Yeah.
You're essentially buying, you know, okay, so there's the game Monikers, right? That's essentially Fishbowl, except you buy the game to have all of the content. That's what you're doing here. You're playing Mao, except you're buying pre-generated cards to do it with things that you may not have the imagination to come up. Yeah, they all have a rule.
Oh, I see. Oh. I see. So they're pre-genned rules. Okay, I was thinking you just had cards that said 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
There's a set of 21 cards.
Some money.
But then you have a stack of 100 rule cards.
I think I have played this game exactly, but with just a regular deck of cards.
Yeah.
That's Mao.
You probably just
make
up the rules.
Traditionally
I remember specifically saying cheers to the governor, so.
Oh, well, interesting.
I mean, I add that in Mao, though, so it's kind of like, who knows?
It is the same argument that people have about Fishbowl versus Monikers, and I always come back with, the nice part about having a set of cards is it does things that are outside of what you would normally think of as like a really cool mechanic change, and it does it very effectively because they've spent a lot of time thinking about the ways to change the game to make it more difficult versus just like making something up, because a lot of times, you know, I'd like to think I'm creative, but the rules I come up during Mao are not like super unique. It's always the same, you know, 6 or 10 rules that I have in my back pocket to pull out and be like, hey, I got a good one. So this is nice. This is a nice change of pace, and it kind of breaks things up and gives you a lot of options. Anyway, cool game. I guess next time we're all together, I'll bring it. We can play it right out.
Right after we finish Oath.
Yeah, right after we finish Oath. Ben, what have you been playing?
I honestly been super fucking busy and have not been playing really anything. I put one thing in here, which I wanted to complain about mostly, is I tried to boot up the Master Chief Collection recently on my PC. I had been talking to Liz for a while about it, and she likes shooters, and I convinced her to play through some of the Halo games with me. I thought that would be fun because I grew up playing them, and I thought she would enjoy them. And I set it all up. I got down, I streamed it to my TV using my NVIDIA Shield. I got controllers set up, and that is when I discovered that they removed all of the split screen play from the PC version of the game, and you can only do that in the Xbox version. There is no split screen in the PC version of the Master Chief Collection.
Why?
What the heck? That's crazy.
It is infuriating.
Yeah.
And everybody, I looked it up. Apparently, somebody made a mod for it, but the mod just runs 2 instances of the game on your computer and then, like, side screens them. And it's like, that's not what I want.
Ouch.
Oh, man.
Why is that not what you want? That sounds hilarious.
And everybody else online was just like, just so download it on your Xbox, because we assume you have an Xbox and also have the Play Pass, which is, to be fair, do have an Xbox, but don't have the Microsoft Pass, so, and I'm not buying Halo Master Chief Collection a second time.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's I annoying. Just went, well, guess we're not playing this. Never mind. So that was my disappointing video game story.
Stupid Halo.
Why?
So dumb.
Why what? That they'd remove it?
Would they not have split screen?
So there's so many PC port games that do that, where they have a perfectly functional split screen on Xbox, and then they're just like, oh, now it's on PC, we're just gonna remove that. Like, this is not the only game that does that. It's infuriating to me, because I specifically, in my house, I don't play on my consoles at all, and I don't have new gen consoles. I bought a really nice NVIDIA Shield 4K so I could stream, you know, co-op games down on my big TV. And it's just a bunch of PC games just don't support the co-op that's in the Xbox version. It's just, so it's weird. The worst.
Well, if you're looking for a co-op game, there's this Penguins heist game that we played a while back.
I'll see if I can talk Liz into it.
Yeah.
I've seen split screen on PC before where they go even further than just split screen and they let you do it on two different monitors.
I've never seen that, but that
I don't remember what game it was.
That's really cool.
But like that is what they should be doing on PC, not removing split screen.
Yeah. Improving it.
Yeah.
At the very least, leave it the same. Damn, man.
Stupid Halo. Caleb, what have you been playing?
I picked up and I've been playing through Stellar Blade, which just recently released on PS5.
Mm-hmm.
It is a third-person action game. It takes a lot from Nier Automata, which means that the music is excellent. The gameplay is really fun. It is a lot more focused on parrying and dodging in this one, I will say, which makes the combat flow better for me. I personally really enjoy parry-focused games. It's got some excellent art. It's a decent story. It's nothing to write home about, I think. But it's okay. And, man, if you're going to play it, don't play with the English voices because they're not great.
Too good.
Oh, really?
They're not great, man. The English voice acting is rough.
But they do the thing where they talk while you're, like, in the middle of a fight because I can't have
subtitles on
when that's happening.
Occasionally that does happen. What I do, generally, if it's a boss fight, I just read it and die. Because it's more important that I get the information at least once. But yeah, if I'm just running around, it doesn't normally happen when you're just running around. I think like when you're getting in combat, just running around. But occasionally it'll happen at the beginning of a boss fight. Someone will start talking to you. So I just stand there and die. It's worth it.
I read that it's the same. It's actually the same composer that worked on this.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, that explains it. It's really good music. It's not as good as Nier Automata, but it's really good.
I mean,
also,
what
story
is,
doesn't compare in any way to Nier Automata.
Hmm.
It does have a similar feel a lot of the time, the story, because it's a lot about androids. You play as an android.
No way.
Not a spoiler.
It's a spoiler.
I've been really enjoying it. The combat's so much fun.
I also read there was like some quote from the director from Nier Automata that he thought Stellar Blade was a better game.
Yeah, he did.
He said that.
I think he's pretty self-deprecating in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not nearly as good.
Is Eve gonna be the cosplay that everyone is?
Oh my gosh, there's gonna be so many Eve cosplays and so many Lily cosplays. She's like your friend. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of them. There's a bazillion different outfits in that game that you collect as you go. So there's going to be a lot of different Eve cosplay outfits to do. There was actually some controversy with that because the developers announced that their game would not be censored anywhere. And I think Sony enforced maybe a little bit of censorship. Because they had a day one patch that changed a few of the outfits and removed some gore, I think. And there's a lot of complaints about that. Sony's actually accepting refund requests if they list false advertising.
That's
as
so
the,
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a little absurd.
Okay, if you go look at the outfits that people are mad about, the changes are actually so minor.
Yeah, it's
crazy.
Very, very small. But yeah, people are quite up in arms about it.
Going back a little bit, there's an IGN interview with both, I'm gonna butcher his name probably, Hyung-tae Kim, the, director for Stellar Blade, and Taro Yoko, the director for Nier Automata, where they both kind of geeked out about each other's games.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's really cute.
You could tell this takes a pun from Nier Automata.
Yeah.
I did hear that they included a Eve will like stare you down if you don't move her character model for a long period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's also a thing in Nier.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. Last but not least, Jake.
Me. So I've only been playing a handful of things. I finished The Messenger, which I've been playing for a while. That game's so good. I did a little research and I figured out why I didn't play it. Because it came out in, I believe, 2019, which is the same year that Celeste came out. So I was like, oh, it's like an old school pixely platformer. I guess I'll play this. Or I can play Celeste. You know, I'm not gonna say I chose wrong. Celeste, I think, is the better game. But The Messenger is really, really good. I think the main thing that I really like about it is that it has a very sort of like meta sense of humor that I really appreciate. It's constantly just sort of breaking the fourth wall with these little in jokes and stuff. It's really fun. Actually, I wanted to ask. I think Caleb, you're the only one who's played A Sea of Stars, but does it have any of that kind of charm in it, or is it mostly just sort of straight?
Just a little bit, I think. Just a little bit. Yeah. It's got a lot of charm, but it's not the same meta.
That's kind of too bad, because I love that in The Messenger. Yeah. And I've played like an hour of Sea of Stars, and it seemed like it was a very straightforward JRPG.
It is, yes. I would say so.
But that's fine.
And there's not a lot of crossover between the two games.
The little bit I'd heard, it was like locations have like the same.
You go
name
to some of the same
something.
Locations, and you can see things that match up. I mean it's different because 2D versus
3D. But I mean, there's a part in The Messenger where you go to like this old temple, and there's like a moon symbol and a sun symbol, and like the two main characters in Sea of Stars, that's like their symbols is a sun and a moon. And I'm like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I already see a little bit. I don't know if that's them or if it's like a cyclical thing. I don't know. But yeah, The Messenger is really good. My one kind of criticism about it, I guess two, I'll give it two criticisms. The first one is just that damage boosting is a little too easy for anyone who doesn't know what damage boosting is. Huh. When you get hit in a game, it'll make you invulnerable for a few frames. So that way you have a chance to like get out of danger. But in this game, there's a lot of like puzzles where you're supposed to like avoid spikes and stuff. And if I had max health, I would just jump in the spikes and run through them. Or try to make the jump, miss, land in the spikes, and then just jump to the goal and be like, well...
Yeah.
Okay.
No. I remember doing that a lot.
Like it. On the one hand, it's kind of cool that I can do that. On the other hand, I definitely skipped a lot of puzzles. Almost by accident, just because like I would mess up and then just try to recover from it and get to the goal and go, well... Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to die on purpose just to do this again. And then the other complaint I have is that there's a point where the game really opens up. It sort of becomes like a more of like a Metroidvania type experience. And I don't think it always conveys what you're supposed to do very well. The biggest example I can think of is I saved this one character and she was like, oh my god, this is so crazy. I gotta go talk to the prophet. And then she disappears. And I go, oh, okay, I know where the prophet is. I'll go talk to the prophet. Go to the prophet. She's not there. I go back to where she was. She's not there. She's on top of a mountain in a completely different map, and I was like, what? How was I supposed to intuit that she was here? Like, luckily, I was at a point in the game where that was the only place I hadn't, like, solved the thing yet, so I was like, well, maybe she's the answer to that riddle I can't figure out, and it's like, yep, nope, she just went there for no reason, and she just opens up the way, that's fine. Just very silly.
Yeah, I remember being a little lost a couple times in the Metroidvania section.
Yeah, and it's the fast travel's not very good, so it's not just like, I'll just kind of bounce around and figure out where I'm supposed to go. You got to do a lot of running back and forth, which is frustrating. I sort of alluded to this before, but I've been playing more Persona 5 Royal. I finally got to the part where you kill God. Excellent part. Great song for that part. I don't really have much to add about Persona 5. It's just good. It's a good game. I finally get to experience some new Persona 5 content, so that's been cool. That's been neat.
I will say I've gotten to the new Royal stuff, and so far I'm not that into it. I did stop playing Persona to play Stellar Blade, so maybe when I get back to it, it'll
be more interesting. I mean, it's a long game, so I definitely feel getting fatigued by it. Like, especially because the ending, I feel like, is really strong.
Yeah.
And it's really weird that it then just keeps going. Like, you kill God, all the loose ends are wrapped up, everyone lives happily ever after, and then it's like, maybe some more stuff will happen. I don't know.
Yeah. That is weird.
I'm not very far into it. I literally, I like finished that and I was like, I'll get to the next save spot and then I will save and I will quit. And then 45 minutes later, it stopped doing cutscenes, and I got to save and quit.
Yeah.
Wow.
The base game also doesn't end after you kill God, right? There's like a few more months, I think, right?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it ends right after you kill God.
I thought I read that there's a few more cutscenes, but like story stuff happening.
I don't think so. It has been a long, long time since I finished Persona 5. But in my memory, you kill God, and then it's just several cutscenes, and then it ends.
Okay.
Yeah. I could be wrong about that, though. Like I said, it's been ages since I played. And then the last game I played, I just started playing this, like, literally yesterday, but Civ 6. I haven't played a Civilization game in so long. I got a hankering to play some Civilization. And I asked all of our friends who play Civilization what the good ones were, and all of the important ones weighed in, and so I picked 6.
And then Ben says 5.
Yeah, and then today Ben's like, why are you playing 6? 6 sucks. I'm like, I asked everyone. What do you not like about 6?
I don't pay enough attention to the Discord as I should, then that's my
clearly point. I thought about tagging you, but then I got 2 out of 3 anyways. Tim and Owen both said Civ 6, and I was, even if Ben says 5, he's outvoted.
Ben, are you talking about base Civ 6? Because Tim specifically said now that the expansions came out, it's better.
That is also true.
That could be it, honestly. I don't think I've played it much since base game. And I very much enjoy 5, and also you can pick up 5 and all the expansions for very cheap at this point, which is nice. I have not, honestly, I tried 6, didn't like it as much as I liked 5, and don't really see a need to go buy a bunch of expansions for it to see if it's better.
Was there anything in particular about 6 that you did not like?
I'm trying to remember. I think they simplified some of the mechanics that were in 5 in ways that I wasn't a fan of. I'm going to be honest. It's been a couple years.
That's fair. So I know this is coming out of nowhere. It's not like, you know.
No, you're good. As much as I come out like vehemently like, no, 5 is way better than 6. It's like,
it seemed like you had a very strong opinion, yeah.
I do, but like not for any good reasons.
Fair enough. Apparently. I will say it went for a more cartoony art style, which I am not a huge fan of. I kind of liked the more realistic look of Civ 5. But so far, I am really enjoying Civ 6. I had a funny moment. You know how Civ always has those things where it's like, ah, yes, the wheel. It spins and spins, you know, when you, like, invent something. And, like, it started, and I was like, man, this guy sounds kind of like Sean Bean. Yeah. And then a few hours later, I was like, man, this guy, they got a really good Sean Bean impression here. And a few hours later, I was like, let me look up who this is. And it is Sean Bean. They got Sean Bean to do all the tech voices. They did. Which is crazy. Like, what the hell?
Does that character, whoever he's playing, die at some point in the game? Because otherwise,
probably,
it's not good.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually not finished the game yet, but presumably he dies at the end.
Right. I've been playing for the last, like, 3 or 4 years, like basically once a month I do a multiplayer Civ 5 game with some friends that I used to live with who are out in Colorado now, but we have been enjoying that one. Granted, part of the reason we do that one is price of the game plus all the expansions, and also it's easier to run than Civ 6, and the people in California, one of them doesn't have a particularly good computer. Lot easier. We actually started off in Civ 5 by just running it on my laptop in a basement and then passing the laptop around when it was each person's turn. Because they have a multiplayer mode just called Hot Seat, where it's literally designed to just pass it around when it's your turn.
That's
such
so funny.
It's such a good idea. Mm-hmm. It's so simple, so elegant. Yeah, I was in a weird spot where, like, it must have been through a Humble Bundle. I had Civ 6 and all the expansions because I literally checked my Steam history, like, when did I buy this? And the answer is I didn't. The answer is it must have come from a Humble Bundle.
But obviously it's already been discussed and I'm just now finding out about it. But Liz and I both own Civ 6 if you want to do a multiplayer game sometime.
I'd be down to try it. I'm still getting my sea legs a little bit. I don't know.
I thought you were one of the people who was scared of it because they played with Kevin a while back. So,
oh, Christ. Just don't. It definitely helps because now with Civ, when you're playing online, everyone takes their turn at the same time, I think, unless you're at war.
That is... Yes, that is how the multiplayer mode works generally. Granted, the turn won't finish until everybody's clicked in and said, I'm done.
Yeah. For sure, which is still an issue.
Faster, but still Kevin's doing the whole timer every time.
We do have that problem with the group sometimes, and we call each other out when it's like, why are you taking so long? And somebody's like, I've got like 16 armies. We're like, why do you have 16 armies? Where are you?
Wait, are you on my borders? Wait, what's happening? I will say, it's funny that Aaron brought up that Catan thing, because this actually has a global warming system.
Oh, really?
Where it literally marks lands that are low, so if sea levels rise, those tiles are going to get flooded. I haven't reached that point in this game yet, but I don't have electricity yet. Yeah, even though the game keeps yelling at me that no cities have electricity. I'm like, I haven't discovered electricity yet. Stop spoiling it.
Just don't spoil electricity.
Yeah, they don't even know what electricity is yet, Sean Bean. Fucking chill out.
This game's also on like a super sale right now.
Yeah, it's like 90% off currently.
Yeah.
Which is actually making the concept of me buying a couple expansions way better. Most of the expansions are not on sale. Never mind.
I think the ones that are important are
Gathering Storm and Rise and Fall are both on sale for quite a while.
Those were the two.
Those are the big ones, yeah.
Yeah. They also added
like $5 each. I might do that. Can you stop scratching the carpet?
They for also added Alpha Centauri is $2 right now. Just saying.
And actually, I think since I have it, it probably means Caleb, Baron, and Alex also own Civ 6 and all the expansions.
Yep. I have it. With all the expansions?
Well, with the important ones.
Nice. Yes, not, you know. A lot of them are just extra Civs.
So what I'm hearing is we do a podcast Civ 6 game, huh?
Oh, God. I mean, I think you mean a 6 podcast Civ game.
Honestly,
maybe more.
It's not a bad podcast game. You just have it up in the background. You just click on some stuff.
Oh, mid-podcast?
24-hour stream this year is just a full just game of Civ.
Heck yeah.
The only other thing I wanted to say is one of the expansions also adds natural disasters. Mm. So I have been... I don't know why I didn't expect this.
Is that the Gathering Storm one? Or is that the Gathering Storm one?
I think it is the global warming, but also, like, natural disasters. Like, rivers flood constantly, and I keep getting fucked over by that. Mm. There's a volcano I put a city next to. Why? I don't know why. I'm surprised every time a volcano erupts, and I go, oh no, my city! Stupid.
Yeah, that was a strange spot to put a city next to a volcano.
It does. I mean, it keeps things fresh, right? Where it's like, oh, my river's flooded. Oh my god, I had this settled like 100 turns ago, and now I need to rethink all these tiles. It's neat. I've been enjoying it.
Well, we're at the end of the podcast, Jake. I need to know, what is
I did decide. I want to do horror games.
Oh,
really?
Oh, I'm gonna be so
Ben
scared.
Yeah, you just want to make sure Alex and Ben don't get a chance.
Well, someone said it at the start of the podcast. So I was like, actually, I do. I know horror games and I like them. That'd be a fun one.
Resident Evil.
And it's very flexible. There's a lot of leeway in there.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, Resident Evil 4.
Now that you bring up Resident Evil, I got a thing about Stellar Blade.
Oh my gosh.
We were out.
I know, but it's cool. There's a section where it takes away your sword, and all you have is a gun for that section, and you're in like a underground area where there's a bunch of zombie-like creatures, and it feels very survival horror-y, and it's really cool. I think it's a super interesting... It makes it feel really fresh for a while. It's really cool.
Honestly, it's wild to me that they did that, like that they were brave enough to do that, and that it doesn't suck ass.
Yeah, it's
that's
great.
The second
I really
part
enjoy
that's
it.
Impressive,
surprisingly, and the gun's not like particularly good to use. It doesn't feel great, but it's still fun to play that section.
Is this a game I should borrow your PlayStation to play?
I really like it.
Is it worth it?
Did you play Nier Automata?
No,
play that instead.
There you go. We did it. We got there, ladies and gentlemen.
You could borrow the PlayStation and play that, and then also play Spider-Man 2.
True, you do need to play Spider-Man 2.
Which is a great game.
If I have to do 15 hours every 2 weeks to build a good V-gig, I don't have a lot of time.
Don't do that. If it doesn't work, just give up on it.
No!
They text him and say, give me a different one.
Yeah. I believe. All right, I think that's it for us. We'll be back in 2 weeks. At which point Ben will have played Homeworld 1, Homeworld 2, and Homeworld 3, because it will be out at that point. So expect some good reviews from him. Ben, you got plenty of free time, right? He's nope. muted, I think. I don't know. Nope. Doesn't even want to talk to us anymore. He's already done.
I mean, I was going to play Hollow Knight, but I guess I'll do Homeworld instead.
Oh,
you're
oh yeah,
point.
Sure. No, I was going to play Hollow Knight. Yeah.
That's what they all said.
You've had a Steam Deck for how long and how many hours in Hollow Knight have you played? Get out of here. Get out of here. I expect all three Homeworld games and Hollow Knight now for the next podcast.
Jeez.
Commit, Ben. That's what we need.
How dare you?
That's what we need on this podcast is commitment.
I didn't even have time to play a video game in the last 2 weeks.
That's sad.
It is.
Honestly, it's because Halo sucks. That's the problem. You would have played a video game. Stupid Halo.
One time I tried.
Stupid Halo.
Anyway, thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time. See ya. This week's podcast was edited by me, Aaron Juno.
Other voices this week include Alex McCausland, Caleb Juno, Ben Diaz, and Jake John Federkyle.
This week's music was again brought to you by Amer. You can check out his music on Spotify, or you can also check it out on soundcloud.com/Amer. Additionally, you can check out everything that we do, We Are The Horizon, at our website, www.wearethehorizon.com. We have a lot of video posts as well as links to other content we've done in the past.
You can also check out our new series, The Discordant Signal, a multi-arc Starfinder adventure, live on Twitch every Monday at 8 p.m. and then out on YouTube and whatever podcasting app you are using at 6 p.m. on Thursdays.
Again, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.